Think about this. God works in you. This is precisely what our text in Philippians 2 will teach us tonight. Let this thought sink down into your ears and reside in your hearts, that you may be filled with wonder over who is at work in you. And let us be sure that we are cooperating with the one who is working in us. Let's start by reading Philippians 2, verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. If Jesus is the Lord, according to what we saw this morning in verses 9 through 11, we must obey Him. That's why Paul begins in verse 12 by saying, therefore, if every knee shall bow to Him, and if every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, therefore, verse 12, let us obey Him. You see, what Paul had said in verses 9 through 11 has a connection with the two verses we'll be looking at tonight, verses 12 and 13, as well as the rest of the chapter. And also verses 5 through 8. It's all connected. It's all one thought. I know I've mentioned this before, but let me say it again. Please do not look at the verses as though Paul wrote it in verses and that each verse is a separate thought, because they're not. He's writing a letter to someone. He's got a train of thought that he's carrying. Now, what's happening here in verses 12 and 13 is Paul is returning to practical exhortation, encouraging them on how to live. And remember what he is teaching. Unity. Unity is what it's all about right here. And that takes us back to chapter 1, verse 27, where he really introduced the subject of unity. And there he said, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Now you'll notice in that verse, 127, and then what I read a few moments ago in chapter 2, verse 12, that in both of them he talks about whether he is present or whether he is absent. But such and such be the case. In verse 12, he encourages obedience, as I've already pointed out, because that's what our Lord did. We saw that last Lord's Day morning in verse 8. Jesus, our Master, obeyed God. Should we not therefore obey our God, or especially obey Jesus, who is our Master, and whose Lordship we have confessed? It only makes sense. His humble obedience, moreover, also led to his exaltation that we talked about this morning. And now Paul is showing us here that our humble obedience will lead to our exaltation in the form of our salvation. You'll be saved when you humbly submit to the Father. It is by obedience that we back up our confession. Now, I know I mentioned this morning, but I want to say it again. We confess that Jesus is Lord, and that's fine and good. He wants to hear that. But once we have developed that belief, so much so that it comes out in what we say, he now says it has to come out in the way we live. And I brought up Luke 6, verse 46, this morning, when Jesus said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Jesus is dealing with pure logic You say, I'm the Lord? Then do what I say. How can you say, I'm the Lord, and not do what I say? In Matthew chapter 7, as he is drawing to a close of his famous Sermon on the Mount, he is even more forceful, showing that obedience is absolutely essential. When he said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Matthew 7, verse 21. Sorry, I didn't give you that verse earlier. We've got to obey him. Yes, say he's Lord, but then show it. The Philippians, back here in Philippians 2, obeyed in Paul's presence. And have you noticed how we have a tendency to obey or to do what is right when we know someone is looking? Forgetting, actually, that God is always looking, of course. But Paul's bringing out a truth here that I think is so critical, because we have a tendency to do that, and when we think someone's not looking, we may not be so quick to obey. This happens in the book of Judges. The next time you read the book of Judges, try and notice what happens every time a judge dies. Judges 8 and verse 33 is typical of what happened when a judge died in Israel. Listen to Judges 8 and verse 33. So it was, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-Berith their god. Oh, good. Gideon, who always made us do what is right and made us feel guilty if we didn't do what is right, he's finally dead. We can get back to doing what we were doing before. Forgetting how they had suffered for their obedience to idols. Now, it was important for the Philippians to obey the Lord when Paul is absent, because it tests, or it will test, their loyalty. Were they converted to Christ or just to Paul? Was I converted to Christ? Or did someone just have a powerful influence over me? Was I truly persuaded that Jesus is Lord? If the person who taught me fell away, what would I do? If the church lets me down, what will I do? Well, I should remain faithful, because my faith is in Jesus and he never lets me down. He never falls away. Granted, if someone lets us down or sins against us, they can shake us up, but it should never cause us to fall, because we've laid the foundation, Jesus, in our lives. Therefore, Jesus is the Lord, but Philippians 2:12 said, work out your own salvation. Salvation is something that each person has to work out for himself with fear and trembling. I cannot do it for you, and you cannot do it for me. Parents cannot do it for their children, and vice versa. There is a work that only God can do for us, and there is a work that we can only do for ourselves. The work of our salvation is not completed in what God has done for us, because there is a part that he wants us to do for ourselves. Whatever God does for us is not intended by him to make us lazy. He doesn't want a bunch of parasites. He wants workers. I mean, think about our pets. If you've had a pet for any length of time, it has grown real dependent upon you and probably become lazy to a certain degree. They could not survive on their own. And humans are not supposed to be that way. Again, I take you back to Philippians 1 and verse 6, which I believe is one of the major themes of the book of Philippians. There, Paul said that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Okay, so God's doing this work. But why did he have Paul write this letter to the Philippians? Because there was something that they were involved in which they needed to be working out their own salvation with fear and trembling. Work out what God works in. Look carefully at Philippians 2:12. Work out, for it is God who works in you. What he has worked in, let it come out. There's something he's trying to put inside us. But it's not supposed to stay there. It's supposed to come out. That's the point of Philippians 2:12. And he says, work out this own, your own salvation with fear and trembling. Not a slavish terror, but a wholesome, serious caution. Or some might even say that this fear here is self-distrust. I don't trust in myself, but I trust in God. That's what this also is teaching us. Shrink from whatever offends and dishonors God. I don't think Paul has any sympathy here for a cold and formal type of religion that knows nothing of the struggle of the inward growth that we're supposed to be experiencing. We need to have an eager, a trembling anxiety to obey God in all things, remembering the one who made an awesome sacrifice for us. Don't forget what we looked at last Sunday morning. How Jesus humbled himself for us, even to the point of the crucifixion. Not that we may be idle, not that we may be lazy, but that we may be involved in the way that he wants to be. Let us work out our own salvation with fear and trembling because, well, for one thing, God commands us to do it. But he is working with us and in us to obey him. We want to finish what God has begun. If we leave the work undone, undone shall we be. Now, having said those things, look now at verse 13. For, or because, it is God who works in you, both to will and to do for his good pleasure. It is God who works in you, not Paul, nor your favorite preacher or teacher, nor your parents, nor another Christian, nor the American government, where so many people seem to have their faith. Let the wonder of God working in you fill your thoughts this week, brother. Now, if you're someone who doesn't look up the scriptures that I give you, I hope that you will at least write down this one here. Please write this in the margin of Philippians 2:13, or write it on your bulletin someplace. Make a note of it. Isaiah 26, verse 12. Because there's a thought here that I think is real interesting. It's very interesting the way Isaiah words it. Listen to what he says in Isaiah 26:12. And of course, read it and think about it this week in conjunction with Philippians 2:13. Okay, Isaiah 26, verse 12. Listen to this. Lord, you will establish peace for us, for you have also done all our works in us. You, God, have done all our works in us. It sounds like Isaiah is having a hard time separating what God does from what we do. What we do is because of him. It's because of him that we do what we do. So God, establish us in peace because it is you who has done all our works in us. What is going on inside me? What are the good things that are happening? It's you, God, but it's also me. We are working together on this project, God and I. Isn't that an interesting way of wording that? Isaiah 26:12. Strive because God is cooperating with you. When we depend upon others, you know, we have a tendency to become weak and maybe even lazy. Yet when we depend upon God, somehow that makes us strong. I mean, look at all the heroes of the Bible. Not one of them ever claimed to be a self-made person. They all denied it. We've been studying Joseph in the adult Bible class in the auditorium on Sunday mornings. And look at Joseph. Look at the man that he was. But as someone pointed out, and then I pointed out to you later, he's constantly referring to God. He gives everything to God. God is the one who is in control. God is the one for the responsible one for what I am, Joseph is teaching. God's grace does not supersede human effort, but stimulates it. I do because of His grace in me. His grace does not make me dead. It doesn't tell me to stop. It turns me. I've always been fascinated by that. It's not so much that God just says, stop doing that. He takes our energy and zeal that we once put into sin and just redirects it into righteousness. He doesn't want us to be idle, just to sit there like a bump on a log. He doesn't want us to wait for life to come for us. He wants us to get out and get life. The fact that an army is led by a matchless general does not make the soldiers less obedient or loyal. It makes them more so. When I see that the Lord is in charge of my life, He is the one out there leading, and I'm following Him, then I'm more courageous than I ever would have been before. Listen to this quote. Wellington regarded the presence of Napoleon Bonaparte at the head of his army as equal to 100,000 additional bayonets. He understood the force and power of Napoleon's leadership. Well, he was just a man. What about our Lord, who is God? If God is for us, who can be against us? No one. Please think this week on what Paul is saying here in Philippians 2, as well as that one passage from Isaiah 26. If we disobey and do not work out our own salvation, God will not work in us. If we obey Him and work out our own salvation, He will work. He will work in us. To do what? What is Philippians 2, 12 and 13 about? Okay, God's working in us, but He's working to do what? Paul says two things. He works to do in us both. Number one, he says to will. That is, He works in us that we will obey Him gladly and willingly. And He also works in us to do. He works in us both to will and to do. He is trying to get us to move for His sake. To make something out of our lives. Interestingly, the Greek word that Paul uses here is energein, from which we get our English word energy. When you say the word energy, you're using really a word that's nothing more than Greek. And what Paul is saying here is that God is working in you to energize you. He's energizing us to do the right thing. God in you will work to will. He's working in you to work on your will, that you will have the will. And then He works in you, Paul says, to do what He wants. He doesn't work in us simply to feel. It is the will and the doing that matter. We will, but God works the will in us. We work, but God works the work in us. We do nothing without grace, and grace does nothing without us. God's grace and our will working together. That's what we see in Philippians 2 and verse 13. So on the one hand, we're very active. But on the other hand, we're very passive. God is producing all, but we're doing all the action. What He produces in us is our own acts. And it's not that God does some and we do the rest, but the way Paul presents God is that He's doing everything, but then the way He talks to us is though we ought to be doing everything. God's the only proper actor, the author, and we're the only proper actors. God initiates it, and we work. God makes a new heart in us, but then He turns around and says, you make the new heart within you. And why is He doing all this? Why is He working for us to will and to do? Look at those last several words of verse 13. For His good pleasure. It is for His good pleasure. You know, we may have questions about why there are things in Christianity that are there. You know, why does He say to believe this and not to believe that? Why does He say I should be busy doing this and not doing that? Why should I accept a certain command or a certain way of living and reject another? You know, sometimes those things don't make sense to us. We just don't understand why sometimes He is the way He is. But if we can understand what Philippians 2:13 is saying, oh, it'll make things so much easier. Hey, it's not for my good pleasure. It is for His good pleasure. It's all about Him. Now, of course, again, when our God does wonderful things for us, but we must remember that it is all for His good pleasure. When we please Him, He pleases us. And we please Him when we see how He has pleased us. Did you follow that? When we please Him, He pleases us. We please Him because we see how He has pleased us. Again, it's all God and it's all us. And we're working together with Him. What God begins, He completes. What is God working in you? If you're resisting, why resist? There's no need for it. Or maybe you're saying, well, Don, I'm not resisting anymore. You know, I am tired of resisting God. Why have I been trying to fight the God of heaven? I'm ready to submit to Him right now. If you are, come forward right now, please, as we stand and sing.